Chapter 42. Saturday night/Sunday morning. Sarah gazed down into David's sated eyes as he lay on his back on the futon in the living room. "Wow," he said. "Wow, wow, wow. Was it good for ya, baby?" Sarah asked, batting her eyes. David propped himself up on both elbows with exaggerated exhaustion. "If you have to ask, you must not have been paying attention." Sarah slid off and snuggled under one arm, contented smile beaming across her face despite her best efforts to contain it. The perfect moment stretched into minutes. "So, tell me again what the Japanese consul said. Give me back my sword." She said it again, in a scary campfire voice.
"Give me back my sword.
I was sent to summer camp when I was 11. The counselors used to tell us scary stories at night, around the campfire, and the one story I always remember, that everybody always remembers, is about the corpse searching for his heart/hand/kidneys. And he creeps right up behind you and growls in your ear, 'Give me back my kidneys.' The Polish variation is, 'Give me back my kish keys.' What's a kish key? I don't know, and I don't want to know. Don't get too comfortable because I have to go work." Sarah looked up. The digital clock on the DVR said 11:15. "It's Saturday night. What kind of work?" "Polishing, that's all I do." "Tonight? Saturday night? I promised the client it would be ready on Sunday. I have to put in 12 hours a day. Can I see it?" "Nope. I promised the client I wouldn't show it to anybody." She ran her nails lightly across his lean muscular chest. David had a ripped athletic build somewhat reminiscent of the legendary Bruce Lee. He wasn't a fitness nut or anything, but pumping iron, or more specifically sword steel, 9 hours a day had left him with a physique to be envied. "Come on, David. You can show me?" He hoisted himself to one elbow and cradled her head in one hand. "Sarah, I promised. And when I make a promise, that's it. If I made a promise to you, I wouldn't break it." The client asked for absolute discretion. "This is absolute." She gazed into his true blue eyes for a minute, heart swelling. "At last. One true man. I understand. You mind if I just curl up here and sleep?" She was rewarded with a lupine grin. "I was hoping you would." She heard him pad lightly down the hall, the key in the lock, the swing of the workroom door. He kept it locked. The door shut, the lock latched faintly shut. A few minutes later, she heard the steady swoosh of steel on stone through the vents, like the surf at Playa del Mar. She plunged into sleep. She was walking down a hall, a celestial corridor lined with magnificent white Doric pillars inlaid with gold, a marble bridge across the sky surrounded by towering cumulonimbus clouds. A frangipani breeze wafted through the marble hall. Sarah looked around for David, but she seemed to be alone, save for a predator bird, barely visible as it flew in and out of a distant cloud. "Welcome," said a woman's voice from behind her, in the mellifluous echoey coin of dream voices. "No, don't turn around, there's nothing to see anyway. I just wanted to tell you, you've been doing an outstanding job. Outstanding. And I'm putting you in for a commendation."
"Thank you," Sarah replied, without turning.
"Are you with the department?"
"No,"
the woman replied, as though explaining to a slow child. "Are you with the mayor's office?"
"No."
"Well, who are you?"
"I'm your witchblade."
Sarah whirled. Nothing. A hint of fragrance, something exotic, from the Solomons. Then gone.
"I asked you not to turn around,"
the voice said from behind her. "Sorry," Sarah said. She felt a deep shame, as if she'd let down Vince.
"I've come to warn you."
"Warn me about what?"
"About love. You are not one who can share her life with a man, the way most women can."
An irrational anger descended, like a red curtain. "Don't you dare to dictate my love life," she snapped. Sarah came awake, sweating. She'd kicked off most of the bed covers and lay tangled in the sheet like a badly wrapped sandwich. She extricated herself. It was 3:30 in the morning, and the swoosh through the vents was as steady as ever. Had he been at it for 4 hours? She rose, grabbed a terry cloth robe, went into the bathroom, relieved herself, splashed some water on her face and washed up. She doubted she'd get back to sleep. She dressed swiftly in her true religion jeans, a stretch cotton tank top and cotton sweatshirt. Yoshi came into the room, yawning and snarling.
"Come here, cat," she said, scooping the chubby fur ball to her breast, falling into a sofa and cuddling.
Yoshi clawed his way loose. "Well, fine. How could a cat so snuggly be so resistant to snuggling?" Sarah put on her over-the-ankle Reeboks and began to pack up.
She would have liked to have spent the day in bed with David, lingering over the Times, maybe going down the street for takeout breakfast, flipping through the news shows. But clearly, he had other priorities. Problem: her bike was in the workroom. She'd have to disturb him to get it. Oh well, she thought, hoisting her leather overnighter and the tank bag, both of which she'd lugged into the living room. She went down the carpeted corridor past his library, his Spartan bedroom, to the workroom door, constructed of heavy gauge steel, closed, and sealed with a Dunwich deadbolt. The steady swoosh of steel on stone issued faintly from within. Sarah listened for a moment, loath to interfere with his concentration. But if she wanted to leave, there was no getting around it. She had to have her bike. She knocked lightly on the door. There was no response. The swooshing never stopped. She knocked harder. There was a break in the swooshing for an instant. Absolute silence, save for the constant susurrus from the street. "David?" she said tentatively. The swooshing began again, a little more intently. She rapped hard on the door. No response. The swooshing continued. This was ridiculous. She had to have her bike. What was the matter with him? Maybe he was wearing a set of headphones and couldn't hear. She thought of deploying the Witchblade, but that would be a betrayal of trust. In fact, when she felt for it, it was inert. She looked down. Bracelet mode. She held her hand up to the door and willed the ancient gauntlet to appear. Nada. No extrusion. No cooperation. It did not want to unlock the workshop door. Or maybe it was out to lunch. Sarah hauled back her foot and kicked the door robustly several times. The swooshing stopped. An instant of silence, followed by a scraping sound and then the thick click of the lock unlatching. The door opened 12 inches to reveal David, flushed, without his glasses, sweating profusely, with a silly grin on his face. "What? David, I'm sorry to bother you, but I need my bike." "You're leaving?" "I'm done sleeping. I'd love to stay, if there were an invitation," she thought. "But I've got work to do. No rest for the wicked." "I understand. Hold on 1 minute and I'll let you in." David shut the door and slammed home the deadbolt. She stood for a moment outside the locked door feeling foolish. Surely he realized she would never violate his sanctuary if he requested privacy. She heard him scuttling around, some scraping, then the door swung open. "Sorry about that," David grinned foolishly. "It's okay. I understand." The polishing stone was wet, the odd apparatus surrounded by splattered water. She couldn't help wondering where he'd stashed it. The workroom was a museum of oddities, with hundreds of concealing places, among the old cabinets, beneath stacks of packing blankets, in tons of boxes arranged against the wall, in any of several old steel and wood cabinets. She forced herself to stop looking, and concentrated on fixing her bag to the back of the bike. When she finished, she turned, and David was waiting to take her in his arms. "I'd love to have you stay. I really would. But I promised the client." She put a finger to his lips. "Hey, it's all right. I understand. Work's work. Call me. Count on it." She put her helmet on, got on the bike, and walked it out the door into the alley. He'd shut the door and locked it even before she got the engine started.